Okay. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Karen G. from Venice.
I'm Karen Garrison. I'm an alcoholic. And it's through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been sober since May 30th, 1982. And that doesn't make me a miracle. It makes Alcoholics Anonymous a miracle. And if you're new in this room tonight, I want to welcome you to AA. And I always call it God's Magnificent AA, the program that saved my life. And it's going to save yours, too, if you want to take a few quick actions. And I suggest strongly that you get a sponsor tonight, that you get that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you get busy and do everybody else is doing around here. And you're going to stay sober as I've stayed sober for 14 years. And people like me cannot stay sober, I can guarantee you. I want to thank Les for inviting me to come down and share my life with you tonight. This is an honor and a privilege. It's one that I do not take lightly, I'll guarantee you. You guys, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do. And I think that it shows, and I make an awful lot of mistakes, and I do an awful lot of things wrong. But I'll tell you one thing, that I love you. Make no mistake about that. I want to thank my beautiful baby, Shannon, for joining me here tonight. I sponsor the most beautiful women in the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. Shannon, stand up and show them how pretty you are tonight. See, isn't she beautiful? My home group is the Pacific Group in West L.A., a group I'm very, very proud to be a member, just as I'm sure you're proud to be a member of yours. And I guess if you're not proud, you ought to get a job in it. You might change your mind. I certainly have a job in mind on Wednesday night, and I'm proud to have that job, too. But anyway, I've been taught to do an awful lot of things before I wrote my big mouth, and one thing is to talk to my sponsor, and Clancy sends you his love and very best wishes tonight. And if anybody in this room is wondering why I have a man for a sponsor and why I have Clancy for a sponsor, it's really quite simple. I didn't get sober in California. I got sober in Lincoln, Nebraska. You know, that used to be the number one football team in the nation until 2 weeks ago when we got our ass kicked by Arizona State. But, you know, but we might be coming back, guys. Just hang in there, you know. But I was not doing well in Nebraska. I went through 19 sponsors at a rapid clip, and I'm certainly not proud as I stand here tonight. And thank God for the old-timers in AA because somebody loved me enough to get my current sponsor. And I got to tell you that my life has done nothing but totally completely turn around as a result of that. And I absolutely adore the ground that that man walks on. And I talked to him this morning, as I do every single day of my life, and he said, "Where are you going tonight?" And I said, "Down to Bellflower, speak at Lakewood Speakers." And he said, "Well, get up there and share your experience, your strength, and your hope, and tell those people what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Ignore the old-timers. They got there. Don't need your inspiration, my dear. And talk directly to those new people with the life and blood of AA. And I believe that as I stand here tonight, and I welcome you, and I hope that you stay. And then I think I did, without a doubt, the most important thing I can ever do, and that's to say, God, please help me say what you want me to say to these people. God is very much a part of my life tonight, you guys. It did not used to be that way for me, I can guarantee you. I come from an alcoholic hell. I cannot even describe it. It was so bad. And, you know, my life is real good today, and sometimes I forget how bad it was. And I can tell you, the day I got sober, I weighed 95 pounds. I was the color of squash. I now call it hepatitis. I had a liver cirrhosis. I had ruptured esophageal varices. And if you don't know what that stuff is, you don't want to know, because you die from that kind of stuff. And I was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And if you guys haven't drank Mad Dog, I need to tell you, it's not one of your finer wines, I can assure you. I'll guarantee you one thing, that crap has never seen a grape, make no mistake about that. And I literally could not believe what's going on in my life. I'd lost my children. I lost my husband twice. Although I really care about that, I want you to know. I lost my car. I lost my house. I destroyed every relationship I'd ever had with anybody. And I was clearly dying from alcoholism. And then I lost the one thing that brought my knees in this disease. I lost my nursing license. And you guys, I love my profession. And that absolutely devastated me, but did not stop me from drinking. And there's a reason for that, and it's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I have an obsession that somehow, someday, I will learn to control and enjoy my drinking. The persistent illusion is astonishing. Many of us pursue in the gates of insanity and death, just like our book talks about. And I'll guarantee you one thing. I was in the gates of insanity. I got sober and almost into my coffin. And I'm truly grateful to stand here 14 years sober tonight, because I really should be dead. And, you know, it didn't start out my life with me standing on Skid Row. I got to tell you guys, I come from a wonderful home there in Nebraska. And I want you to know that. And my mother wanted you to know it, too. I'll guarantee you that. I had a beautiful, sophisticated, elegant mother that died 3 years ago. And I miss my mom so much, I cannot begin to tell you guys. And my mom was always so proud her daughter was 10 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous when she died. Although she did not believe I was an alcoholic the day she died, if you want to know the truth. She thought I was having a few problems, and I sure as hell was, I can tell you that. But, you know, what I miss about her the most is that whenever I go speak anywhere, I always call my mom up, and she'd say to me, "Why do you have to get up there and tell those people all that stuff about you? They're not going to like you." And I'd always say, "Mom, the rottener you are in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more people love you." And she'd say, "Well, I don't understand that." And I say, "Well, you don't have to understand it." And she'd say, "And don't tell those people that you're afraid, because they don't like people that are afraid." And I'd always say, "Mom, the more afraid you are in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more people love you." And one more time, she'd say, "I don't get get it, and why would she get it, you guys? She wasn't an alcoholic. And then she'd always end up by saying to me, and I'd prod her into it at a given moment. She'd say, you know, I'm going to tell you something, young lady. You come from good stock, and we don't air our dirty laundry in public. And I'd always say, Mom, it's not dirty anymore. And she didn't understand that either. But she sure loved you guys, let me tell you. And I come from an alcoholic home, and I don't think that's neither here nor there. I don't do well with people that stand at AA podiums and blame anybody for anything. And my dad died from this disease on the streets of Chicago in 1979. And you tell me how a major in the Air Force dies on Skid Row. I don't have that happen, other than the fact that he was an alcoholic. And whether or not he ever found A or not, I do not know. I just know that he certainly did not stay sober as a result of it. And, you know, one more time tonight, this is a cunning, baffling, powerful disease that kills people. This is not a game I'm playing up here. This is serious business. And I would give him the world if my father were alive tonight, because we would have one hell of a lot to talk about, I can tell you. I have a sister who was Miss Rah-Rah in high school and homecoming queen and cheerleader and all that kind of crap, and made straight A's and never cracked a book, and I made straight F's and never cracked a book, and that was the difference. My sister was a beautiful little girl. She's a gorgeous woman today. She looks nothing like I do, I got to tell you. And she was a model for many, many years for Neiman Marcus in Dallas, Texas, and retired here recently. Now she's teaching school in the West Indies. And I got to tell you guys, as a direct result of this program, I love my sister very, very much today. And I recently found out something about her. She's also very beautiful on the inside, too, and I never used to know that. I have a brother who's a pilot in the Navy in Spain who retired here about a month ago, and now he's working for TW Airlines. And you know, my brother was in that first attack at Operation Desert Storm, and I am so grateful that nothing happened to him over there, I got to tell you. And neither one of these people are alcoholic. I have another sister who's married the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, who got me out of one hell of a bunch of trouble when I got sober, and I'm welcome to their home state, and I never used to be. I come from basically a very boring family, if you want to know the truth. They're highly successful people, and they bore me to tears, I got to tell you. I have a couple kids who are 37 and 38 years old, and I know I certainly don't look old enough to have kids that age, but by God, I am. And this is where it really starts getting interesting for me. These kids are anything but boring, I got to tell you guys. As a matter of fact, they're a couple of jerks, if you want to know the truth. You know, I love my kids very, very much. Please don't get me wrong, that they are indeed a couple of jerks. And my oldest son's an alcoholic, and I know our book says we don't call the people an alcoholic, but I'll call him one if I want to, because he is one. And got picked up for his number 9 drunk driving charge, and one more time he's gotten out of it. It never ceases to amaze me the stuff that we get away with, and I know I'm the last person in the world that can help that kid. I can just be an example to him and keep my mouth shut, and that's what I try and do. I have another son who I did not believe was an alcoholic or had a problem with drugs or anything like that until a year ago last April. And I went back to Nebraska to speak at a conference I started 10 years ago there, and they asked me to come home and be their Sunday morning speaker. And I thought, well, I'm not going to tell my kids I'm coming home. I'm just going to surprise them. Don't ever tell your kids you're not coming home, I got to tell you. And I walked in my eldest son's home at midnight on a Friday night, and my youngest son was there at midnight with sunglasses on, and he was just a mess, I got to tell you guys. And I hadn't seen him for almost a year, and he'd been doing crystal meth for almost a year, and, you know, that drug will suck you dry in short order, let me tell you. And I didn't recognize my own child, and his wife kicked him out of the house and stuff, and he was just a mess. And I found my kid sobbing in my lap, you guys. And he said to me, he said, Mom, I need some help. And I said, well, you sure as hell do, I got to tell you. And I know I'm the last person that can help him. And I called my sponsor long distance, and Clancy told me, he said, get him a phone number and back out of it right this minute. And I really don't know anybody in NA there in Lincoln, because I'm not a member of Narcotics Anonymous, but I went back to that conference that I was speaking at, and I found this kid that my son went to junior high with, and he was 9 years sober in AA, in addition to being a member of Narcotics Anonymous there in Nebraska. And I'm happy to report tonight that my son is a year and a half sober in Narcotics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska, with a sponsor and everything. And boy, is his mom proud of him, I got to tell you. I wish that his brother would pay attention, but I guess it's not time for that yet and stuff. But all I can do is pray for him, and I know that as I stand here tonight. But anyway, I used to just think this youngest son of mine was goofy, and I'll tell you why. I got a phone call from him about 9 years ago in L.A., and he said, Mom, I'm getting married tomorrow. And I thought, getting married tomorrow? It was a surprise to me that anybody would even have him, if you want to know the truth. And I said, Jeff, why do you call me the day before the wedding and expect me to be back in Nebraska? I said, the Pope's in Los Angeles. I doubt if I can get a flight out of here. And he said, Mom, I don't expect you to come. It's just going to be a tiny little wedding. Don't worry about coming. Well, you know, you don't tell people like me that stuff. I wanted to be there. And I was right about that. The planes were just jammed and stuff. And I was just going to twit. You have no idea. And I talked to my sponsor about it. And this is the kind of loving direction I get from my AA sponsor. He said, well, what are you going to do? Walk? If you can't go, you can't go. Now shut up about it. I don't want to hear another word about it. And I did, and I talked to my mom the day after the wedding. I said, Mom, how'd the wedding go? And she said, it was very lovely, but who was that little girl with them? And I said, what little girl? And she said, well, apparently Jeff's got a 4-year-old daughter that you didn't know anything about. And I suggest you call your son and talk to him about it. And I need to tell you guys that I was more than happy to do that. Make no mistake about that. And I called Nebraska, and I said, Jeff, how'd the wedding go? And he said, it was very nice, Mom. And I said, who was that little girl with you guys? And he said, Mom, that's my daughter. daughter. And I said, why didn't you tell me that I had a grandbaby? I was so upset with him. Not because I had a grandbaby, because I didn't know about it. And he said, Mom, I was afraid you'd get drunk. And I thought, get drunk? I wouldn't have gotten drunk. Well, at least I don't think I would have. And I was on the first thing smoking out of Los Angeles, you know, to meet my little granddaughter. And I got to tell you guys, this child is the icing on the cake. She's the apple of my eye. Her name is Brandy, and doesn't that just figure? You know, and she walked up to me at the airport, and she said, are you my grandma? And I said, well, yes, I am. And she said, well, you know, you're my favorite grandma. And see, that's what I want to hear. That's the stuff I strive for. And I said, Brandy, why do you say that? You don't even know me. And she said, because you wear ribbons in your hair, and grandmas don't wear ribbons in their hair. And I thought, well, that's about the stupidest thing I've ever heard, but I'll take whatever I can get here. And I flew her out to California several years ago to give me a cake at one of my AA birthdays, and she flew out from Nebraska by herself, and I thought she'd be terrified to be on that airplane by herself, but I was wrong about that. She got off that plane like she owned it after sitting in the cockpit of the pilot the whole trip, and I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble, because this little girl never shuts her mouth for 2 minutes, you guys, and I'm not used to being with little kids, and they drive me crazy real quick. And I said, Brandy, do you ever be quiet? You're giving me a headache. And she said, Grandma, I have a lot to say, and if you don't like it, take some aspirin, is what she said to me. I think that we have a prospective member of AA on our hands there. I hope I'm wrong about that. I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska 4 years ago in January. I took my second grandchild, a beautiful baby boy that was born, my son and his wife. And I got to tell you guys that tears of gratitude rolled down my cheeks because I should not have been standing there. And I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska 3 years ago in January. I took my third grandbaby, another beautiful baby boy that was born to my son and his wife. And one more time, those tears were rolling. And I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska last January. I took my fourth grandchild, another beautiful baby boy that was born to the alcoholic son of mine and his wife. And one more time, those tears were rolling. And I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska 3 months ago last Saturday night. I took my fifth grandchild, a beautiful baby girl that was born to my son and his wife, and I got the honor of naming that child. I named her an old family name. Her name is Hannah Rose, and she's absolutely beautiful, you guys. She's just a gorgeous little girl, and I'm not prejudiced or anything, but she is. She's the most beautiful baby in the whole world, and those kids are very much a part of my life today, and I got to tell you, but for the grace of God in this program, that would not have happened, I got to tell you, and I love them very, very much and stuff, but anyway, you guys, when I was growing up, I was a disruptive jerk is what I was. Always in trouble, always kicked out of classrooms. I hated discipline. I was very, very rebellious. I literally hated people telling me what to do. And I like it even less today, if you want to know the truth. And, you know, I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And I hear that a lot from AA podiums, and I'm right on with that 125%, I got to tell you. You know, I really don't remember my first drink, but I can tell you that I hope to God I never forget my last one. And I hope it was my last one. But I'll never forget what alcohol did for me from the very beginning. It made me feel like I belonged, and I could be anything I wanted to be. I could do anything I wanted to do. I drank at any given opportunity after that, and I was probably about 13 years old. You know, I realize that I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, and I honor your podium by identifying myself as an alcoholic up here. I used a lot of drugs, too. I didn't make that a small part of my story. My sponsor encourages me to do that. And, you know, when I was growing up in Nebraska, there just wasn't a lot of drugs on the street. But I'll guarantee you, I found every single one of those drugs. And, you know, there was some marijuana and speed and stuff. And today, if you get caught for possession of marijuana, you get a ticket, big deal. When I was growing up, you went to prison is what happened to you. And that didn't scare me. Nothing scared me. I did everything I wasn't supposed to be doing. And I'm one of these alcoholic females, and I hate to say this from an AA podium, but it's precisely the way it was for me. You know, if you pat me on the head, my pants fall off is what happens to me. And I got myself into a lot of trouble when I was growing up. I absolutely love men. I love everything about them. You name it about them, I love them. They've been the downfall of my entire existence, and they remain the same today, I'm sorry to say. And I particularly like sick men, and there's a room full of them here tonight. I can just feel it. That's it. One thing I love about Southern California, it's got so many sick men, and I'm just entertained around the clock, 24 hours a day. And, I'm getting the age now, girls with silver hair minutes don't become very attracted to me, which opens up a whole new ballgame, I got to tell you. Those young ones are nice girls, but soon you got to talk to them, and they got nothing to say I want to hear, I got to tell you. And I'm sure that I have nothing to say they want to hear either, but... You know, I got to tell you guys a funny story. I was in Nashville, Tennessee about 3 years ago giving a talk, and one of the fine ladies of Nashville, Tennessee walked up to me afterwards, I want you to know, and this woman said to me, she said, you're disgusting. And she wasn't kidding you guys. She meant every word of it. And I said, lady, from where I come from, being disgusting is a step up, I can assure you. And furthermore, if I wanted you to sponsor me, I flown to Nashville and asked you. You know, I hear some women get this podium, you guys, and I wonder if they ever drink. I really do. Or if they do all that drinking in one room and somebody chew them through the keyhole with an eyedropper. You know, I was out there big time. I got myself into a lot of trouble. I've been taught to share that freely in these rooms. And if I offend anybody in this room tonight, I would never offend anybody in the program. It saved my life, I got to tell you. And besides that, my book tells me, and this is my favorite part of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, cling to the thought that in God's hands, your dark past will be the greatest possession you have. And it goes on to say, because you can literally divert death and misery for others. And I found that to be very, very true in my sobriety. And if I offend anybody in this room tonight, I don't want to hear about it afterwards either. But anyway, I got pregnant when I was 16 years old and I had to get married. And as it must be, I'm married an alcoholic. Don't most alcoholic women? I go for colorful, exciting men that beat the hell out of you and all kinds of stuff. And he wasn't even a man, you guys. He was only 17 years old, and I was 16. I couldn't cook. I couldn't clean. I couldn't take care of a baby, nor did I want to take care of a baby. And before we knew it, we had two babies to take care of. And I quickly found out what caused all that, and I put a halt to it, I'll guarantee you that. And that caused me a lot of trouble throughout the years. And my kids don't know how to stop having babies, but their mother sure did, I got to tell you. And that caused me a lot of trouble throughout the years and stuff. And you know, as it must be, I married an individual that refused to work, that drank on a daily basis, and used to come home and beat me up on a daily basis. And I had never seen a man hit a woman before in my life, you guys. I'll guarantee you one thing. If my dad would have laid one hand on my mom, she'd have knocked him from here to the moon, I got to tell you. And I grew to hate this guy very, very much. And I'm not blaming him for my disease, so please don't get me wrong. It's just part of my story, and I need to share it. And some of that family had to get a job, and I hadn't finished junior high yet, for Christ's sakes. And I found a job as a nurse's aide at a hospital there in Lincoln, and the magic was put in Karen's life. I literally fell in love with nursing, and I made a plan to myself. I would love to go to school, and I'd love to become a registered nurse. That's what I would love to do. You know, they say that alcoholics don't have willpower, and I'm here to tell you not from this podium that that is a bunch of crap. I have more willpower than 20 elephants. When I want to do well, I'm going to do well. I don't have any willpower as far as my disease goes. When I want to do something, I'm going to do it. And I went back. I finished junior high. I finished high school. I went to college full-time for 3 years, and I worked full-time for 3 years. And I'm talking about 18, 20 hours a day, you guys, and it's hard stuff to do. I did not drink, not use any drugs during this period of time. At the age of 27 years old, I became a registered nurse. And if you think I'm proud to stand here tonight and tell you that I got jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, and they told me, you are a disgrace to your profession, you're a disgrace to nursing, you're a disgrace to medicine, you are no longer working because we just jerked your nursing license. If you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. You guys, I love my profession, and I really, really mean that. And I would never do anything to jeopardize the people that I take care of, nor the people that I work with under ordinary circumstances. And what I had to tell you now is a story about how I threw it right down the toilet so I could drink. And that is total insanity. It's also called alcoholism. At the age of 27 years old, I divorced this man. And girls, I got to tell you that a whole new world opened up to me, and it's called men and alcohol. And I went absolutely hog wild is what I did. I was engaged 8 times during that divorce. I never did marry these people. 2 of them died from alcoholism, for Christ's sakes. I don't know anything about social drinking. I drank, and I know alcoholics, and we do indeed die from this. And at the age of 27 years old, I went to work in surgery at a hospital there in Nebraska, and I had that job for 19 years. I love working in the operating room. I love taking care of those patients. It's a colorful, exciting nursing position. I drank, ran around with medical people mostly. They were colorful, intense people. They worked hard, and they played hard. And I need to tell you, the incidence of alcoholism amongst my profession is tremendously high, and that'll do a lot for your security level if you're going to have surgery next week. That has to be very, very true. And those people are so grateful that I'm sober that they can't see straight. And I'm talking about alcoholics is what I'm talking about. You know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says clearly that we're to tell in the general way what our drinking was like. And you're going to get the general idea real quick about what my drinking was like. You know, many, many years ago, you guys, I was at a little concert in upstate New York called Woodstock. And that's exactly what my drinking was like. That Woodstock they had 2 summers ago was a piece of crap compared to the one I went to, I got to tell you. There will never be another Woodstock, trust me on that. And I was up there with a medical team of people, and we were supposed to be up there covering this concert and stuff. And the state of New York got wind they're going to have this event. And they told these people, if you don't get medical coverage, you're not having this concert. And so they started hiring people from the Midwest because they thought we'd be more responsible. And we were a seedy lot, I can assure you. I was the first alcoholic to sign up for this event and find another drunk nurses I ran around with to join me. And we met about 80 residents from the East Coast, and there we were at Woodstock, and they paid us all $14 up front money. We spent our money by the time we got there, so we really weren't interested in doing too much work, I got to tell you. And we had a little hospital in that back lot of Woodstock, a semi park back there, and I don't recall being in that semi the entire week, I can tell you. Matter of fact, I don't recall the whole week, if you want to know the truth, but I've never seen so much alcohol in one place in my life, you guys. You could have floated a battleship out of there with no problem whatsoever, and the drugs, it was like a candy store, and everybody was sharing, let me tell you. And really, it was a fabulous week in my life, I got to tell you guys, but I can't tell you that much about it. But I do remember what it was like to stand in front of the stage tonight that Richie Havens sang Freedom, and Joe Cochran, Country Joe and Santana, those groups that I love. I come from the roaring 60s, you guys, and I love rock and roll, let me tell you. And things have not changed in my life a little tiny bit. I loved Elvis Presley, and Janis Joplin was my lady, let me tell you. Wouldn't Janis Joplin have been a fine member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys? I'd have hung out with Janis, let me tell you. I'd have traded Janis for Clancy any day of the week if you want to know the truth. Don't tell him that I said it and stuff. But, you know, drinking for me at one time was a fun, fun thing. It'd be alive me to stand around and say anything but that. But I cannot remember the fun. I remember the pain that it caused me. And it almost cost me my life. And like I said earlier, I am truly grateful you guys to be standing here 14 years sober and stuff. But I'm going to give you a couple quick drinking stories and get my recovery here. I have a lot of time here tonight. You know, I love the horse races, too. I love everything I'm not supposed to be doing. And I've been in the horse races in Omaha, Nebraska with a couple nurses that I worked with. And the girls told me, they said, Karen, the horse race has been over with for 3 hours. We're all drunk. Let's go back to Lincoln. And And I said, well, run along. I'd met two guys from Council Bluffs, Iowa, and these guys want to take me to a party, and by God, I was going. Like I said, you pat me on the head, and I'll follow you anywhere you want to go. And I really can't tell you much about this party, nor the guys that I was with. I just know that I woke up out of a blackout on Highway 2 by Palmyra, Nebraska, a little bit town of about 200 people. And I found out something very interesting about Palmyra, Nebraska, that they take a dim view of naked women walking on their highways. I found that out. And there I was at 2 o'clock in the morning walking stark naked down the highway, my high heels carrying my purse. And it was February in Nebraska. And it's a tad bit nippy out there in February in Nebraska to be doing that, I got to tell you. And tonight I know why ducks' feathers freeze, I can assure you. And of all the luck, the first person I ran into was a highway patrolman. And, you know, the cops in Nebraska travel by themselves. They don't have a partner. And out here in California, they're a little bit smarter than that. And this guy stops his squad car, and he rolls down his window. He turns on his siren, and he looked at me, and he said, what are you doing? And I thought, well, that's about the stupidest thing I've ever heard anybody say. It's quite obvious what I was doing. And he said, lady, you get in this squad car, and you sit down, and don't you touch me. Well, you know, one thing about a person like myself, every time I'm in trouble, I'll do one thing more to make it worse every single time. And I looked at this cop, and I said, I'm not getting in your squad car because you might try and rape me. He said, lady, I wouldn't bet any money on it. You are absolutely disgusting is what you are. And I'm going to tell you guys that that made me madder. Anything that was going on to show you how sick I was. And he had to get a matron out from Palmyra, Nebraska City Jail to come out there and get me. And that woman was not pleased, I'll guarantee you. They were very busy at that downtown jail. Not had time for this foolishness. And, you know, I got to tell you guys another funny story real quick. You know, speaking of highway patrolmen, my record with the highway patrol has not been too great, but I got to tell you, it's been real great the last 14 years of my life. But let me tell you what happened to me about 2 months ago. Nobody but AA members has this happened to. I was on my way home from work, and I worked nights and stuff, and it was about 7:30 when I was on the Santa Monica Freeway, and I'd really worked hard that night, and I was in no mood for anybody's shenanigans, I got to tell you. I just wanted to get home, and this motorcycle highway patrolman pulled up alongside of me, and he was waving at me, and I thought, what are you waving at me for? And it was like, you know, he knew me or something, and I just kept right on going, and he, you know, just kept looking at me, and I thought, what is he looking at me for? I wasn't speeding or anything, and so I got off my off-ramp on Cloverfield there, and he was right behind me with his siren on, and I thought, well, I wonder what I did. So I got my driver's license out and stuff, and he came up to the door of my car and pulled off his helmet, and this is what he said to me, you guys, and I could not even believe it. He said, Karen, I'm Secretary of the Meeting out in the Valley. Will you come out and be one of my speakers one night? And I thought, why don't you call people on the telephone? That's what most people do. And he said, well, because this is more fun, that's why. And he asked me, he said, does your sponsor take the Santa Monica Freeway to work? And I said, my eyes lit up like firecrackers, you guys. And I said, well, yeah, and yeah, as a matter of fact, he does. And he said, what time does he usually take it? And I said, oh, about 10:15 in the morning. And so he nailed Clancy that morning, too. But anyway, I talked to my sponsor about 11 o'clock in the morning that morning. And I said, good morning, Clancy. He said, let me tell you what happened to me this morning. I said, well, let me tell you what happened to me first. And so I told him what happened. He said, did you give that guy my name? And I said, no, I didn't. I gave him his off-ramp. That's not even a lie. Anyway, I wanted to share that story with you guys. But anyway, I went downtown from that little naked episode, booked for indecent exposure, for assault and battery, for kicking in his windshield, for hitting her, for hitting him, all the delightful antics that we pull as practicing alcoholics. And I will never forget how humiliating it was to be in that courtroom the very next morning when my brother-in-law, the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I didn't know he was working down there that day, came walking up to me, and he said, Karen, have you lost your marbles or what? Why would you do something like this? And you guys, I looked at my brother-in-law, and I was to say this to many, many people in my drinking career in many, many courtrooms. I said, oh, for Christ's sakes, Dennis, this could happen to anybody. You know, we all know better than that. And I was to say that to many, many people in my drinking career in many, many courtrooms, I got to tell you guys. But anyway, that cost me about $3,000 to get out of that, and I just shirked it off like it was no big deal. You know, drink, these things are going to happen occasionally, so what? I will never forget what it felt like to wake up in the very hospital I worked at in surgery, in their emergency room, one more time coming out of the blackout, one more time I'd been to the horse races. You know, for a number of years, I thought the horse races were my problem. It certainly was not my drinking. And I'm one of these alcoholic females with a big mouth when I drink, and I have a big mouth in sobriety, but I can tell you that pain is a teacher here. It's getting a lot better. And I'd smile at some guy at that horse race track, and he belted me right in the teeth is what he did, and a plastic surgeon was putting 18 stitches in my mouth. And I'll never forget what this doctor said to me, you guys, as long as I live, I'll never forget this. He said, Karen, we love you so much. You are such a good nurse and stuff. We think you're an alcoholic. Let's send you to a treatment center and get this drinking problem taken care of so you can get on with your life here. And you guys, I could not believe the audacious man had that he would say that to me. And I said, just fix my lip and get out of my face. I'll drink if I want to drink. And that's exactly what I did. And the drunk driving charges and the bad checks, all the stuff that we eventually do. My kids were in trouble. I never could marry these guys I was engaged to. They kept dying from alcoholism. And I thought to myself, I need to get married to my ex-husband again. That's what I need to do. The kids need their father. Besides, I need planning to get even with him for all the things that he's done to me. And those are not very good reasons to get married again, I got to tell you. And I'm certainly not proud of that as I stand here tonight. And, you know, if anybody in this room is thinking about getting married to the same person twice, don't do it. You're going to be sorry. The only way I can describe it is like taking a bite out of the same turd twice, if you will. That's why they don't like me in Tennessee, folks. And I danced that man through three of the most miserable years of his life on the face of this earth. And I love to tell you guys this story I'm about ready to tell you. And my sponsor always tells me that is not funny, and you should not be telling that from AA podiums. And I always say, okay, I won't tell anymore. And he said, no, go ahead and tell them, let those people see how sick you really were, and apparently how sick you really still are. And I'm still sick, and I still think it's funny, and I'm telling the story. When I married him again, I told him, I said, if you ever hit me again, buddy, I'm going to kill you next time you hit me. And he said, I'll never hit you again ever. And I said, you better see that you don't. And he lied is what he didn't. And he came home drunk one night. And I happened to be sober this night for some reason. And I'll never know why, because I usually wasn't. And girls, you know what guys do when they come home drunk? They want to take you to bed and stuff. And I was not buying it. There's anything I can't stand that some drunk man mauling me when I'm sober. And I will say that when the shoe's on the other foot, though, it's fine with me. And that guy came home and indicated that to me. And I said, you get your hands off me and leave me alone. I wanted nothing to do with him, period. And he broke my arm is what he did. And I'm here to tell you guys that I was pissed, make no mistake about that. As a matter of fact, I'm still pissed about it, if you want to know the truth. And I told him, I said, you go to sleep on that couch, and so help me God, when you wake up, you're going to wish you'd never been born. And he sat up for hours, you guys, with his eyes pried open. And as it must be, he finally passed out. And I started drinking martinis, and this is a classic example of what alcohol did for me. Alcohol told me what to do. I didn't tell it what to do. And I had about 8-10 martinis, and I was feeling no pain, I got to tell you. And I was sitting there watching this guy. And I hate to tell you what this man was doing, but I can't tell you the story unless I tell you what he was doing. He was laying on the couch playing with himself. And I thought, you disgusting man, you make me sick to my stomach. And the more I drank, the madder I got. And you guys, you know, I'm a nurse, and I'm very familiar with male anatomy. And I'd be very familiar with male anatomy if I wasn't a nurse, you know. But anyway, I thought to myself, what can I do to get even with this guy for all the things that he's done to me? And I came with this brilliant idea in my drunken stupor. That's one thing that we should never do, is drink and think at the same time, I got to tell you. And this is many, many years ago, you guys, when Super Gloopers came out. You know, Mrs. Bobbitt has nothing on me, I can assure you. I was a foreigner before she ever got started, and I knew that stuff worked very, very well, because my kids were plastering the house that wasn't moving, and I got that super glue, and I read the directions on that super glue, and like I said, I was drunk, and I wasn't seeing very clearly, and what I thought those directions said were, if this hits human skin, you better get it off within 15 hours. Now, why would it say something stupid like that? What it said was, in fact, if this hits human skin, you get it off within 5 minutes, is what it said. And I went over to this man, and I poured super glue all over this guy's groin, and I mean everywhere. You know, I tell this story all the time. Sometimes I just really think it's funny, I guess, you know. I get so excited I could do it all over again if you wind up with it. You know. And I mean super glue everywhere and stuff. And I laughed about it and I went to bed. And I woke up in the morning to screams of horror like you cannot even believe. And, you know, I did not mean to hurt this guy as bad as I did, you guys. And I swear to God that's true. But I'll tell you what happened to my ex-husband. This guy never had the advantage of being circumcised when he was born. And now he clearly was, I can assure you. And we had a telephone by our bedroom, here in Lincoln. And he called the police and the cops went from our home. There's sirens going. There was an ambulance out there. The neighbors were gawking out of their windows. And, you know, one thing you guys got to keep in mind here, they did not see things like this happen in Lincoln, Nebraska. In California, it wouldn't surprise me one bit, but certainly not there. And the cops were laughing, which led me to the whole thing was funny. And they said, lady, are you crazy or what? Why would you do something like this? And you guys, I looked at those cops and I said, what makes you think that I did it anyway? I was only standing there with glue on my hands, for Christ's sake. And they said, you're under arrest for assault and battery. And I said, you cannot arrest wives in Nebraska for assault and battery against their husbands. I knew better than that. And 2 days later, when I got out of jail, I guess I didn't know better than that. And they took that man to the very hospital I worked at in surgery, and he had to have surgery. And one more time, the whole staff saw what Karen did. And they took me to jail, I might add, and it turned out to be a terrible, terrible thing. Those doctors there in Lincoln couldn't get that glue off, and they had to get 2 surgeons down from Creighton University Medical School in Omaha, Nebraska to get that glue off. And, you know, there's a paper in about that at Creighton, and anybody in this room is thinking about going to medical school there, you can read about it if you want to.
Please turn it over.
Took me to jail, I might add, and it turned out to be a terrible, terrible thing. Those doctors there in Lincoln couldn't get that glue off, and they had to get two surgeons down from Creighton University Medical School in Omaha, Nebraska to get that glue off. And, you know, there's a paper in about that at Creighton, and anybody in this room is thinking about going to medical school there, you can read about it if you want to. I'd always want a paper in about me, but not like this, I got to tell you. And I was sitting in that jail thinking to myself, I am getting the hell out of this marriage, because when this guy comes home from the hospital, he's going to glue something to mine shut, and he would have too, I got to tell you. And, God only knows I couldn't have that happen. And I divorced that man one more time, and I will tell you guys on the brighter side of things here tonight that Alcoholics Anonymous really does work, because we have an amends step in this program, and my sponsor made me get on an airplane and fly to Sacramento, California and make amends to my ex-husband, where he currently is his new wife and stuff, and I tried to tell my sponsor, I'm not sorry that I did that, therefore I have to make the amends. He said, I don't care whether you're sorry or not. Get on the airplane and get there and do what I'm asking you to do, and maybe one of these days you will be sorry. And I didn't tell anybody in this room tonight that when that guy sees me, he kind of backs up, I got to tell you. But we were able to sit down and talk and stuff, and I made my amends to that man. And I will tell you guys that I walked away from that man. I was free of what I had done to him. I was free of being married to him twice. And I will tell you the promises in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous started coming to my life when I made those amends. So I know this thing works. You just got to do it for it to work. And I also want to share with you what's happened as a direct result of me making amends to that man. You know, to me, the greatest power in the world is power of example in Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys, and I really mean that. But you know, anyway, I got a phone call from my ex-husband about 2 years ago, and I about fell off my chair in Venice, California. I'd be the last person who'd ever ask for any advice, I got to tell you. And this is what this man said to me. He said, Karen, I can't quit drinking. What do I do? And you guys, I could not believe it. And I quickly wanted to get on an airplane and fly to Sacramento and manage the whole thing, if you want to know the truth. But AA kicked it for me big time, and I found myself saying to him, why don't you call Sacramento AA? I said exactly what I should have said to this man. I gave him two phone numbers of the finest people I know in Alcoholics Anonymous up there, and I didn't really hear any more about it and stuff. And I told my kids a long time ago, see, my ex-husband and I are still very much in love with each other, if you guys want to know the truth. There will not be a third time in my lifespan, I can tell you. We are totally incompatible, and we both know that and stuff, but we still care very much for each other and so forth. But anyway, you know, the kids would always try to get us back together, and I finally had to tell my kids, don't even discuss your father with me anymore, okay? I'm glad your dad's in your life. I'm glad he loves you, that you love him. It should be that way. But do not discuss your father with me anymore. So I really didn't hear any more about it from them. And so anyway, I got a dozen red roses from this guy last year on my AA birthday. And this is what the card said, you guys, and nobody but AA members say this kind of stuff. He said, happy AA 13th birthday and stuff. And I thought to myself, my God, he must be sober in AA. And so I talked to my sponsor about it, and I said, Clancy, I need to send him a thank you note or something. He said, you stay away from him. He is a newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous. The last person in the world he needs is you back in his life. Now, you stay the hell away from him. And so I didn't do anything about it and stuff. And anyway, I got a phone call from him again in October, and he said, you're going to be speaking in Sacramento next month, aren't you? And I said, well, how do you know that? And he said, well, Karen, I've been sober in AA for almost 2 years, and I have a sponsor and everything. And you guys, the best part I want to share with you tonight is that I wish him well. I do not hate that man anymore. That is a miracle for me in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to tell you. And I have to believe it's only a direct result of making amends to him. So if you need to make amends in this room tonight, there's no telling what's going to happen on the other side of that, I got to tell you. And I urge you to get them done, you know, as quickly as your sponsor wants you to get them done and stuff. But anyway, at this time in my life, I divorced that man one more time, and I got involved with the most bizarre man I've ever met before in my life. This guy told me he was in the mafia. Now, I don't think anybody in Nebraska is in the mafia, for Christ's sake. So I was lying to him, and he was lying to me. It was your typical alcoholic nightmare is what it was. I was drinking on a daily basis. I was taking Valium for severe tremors I was starting to have. It was beginning to be no more fun. You guys, you know, I'm a nurse and I've studied alcoholism. And I knew all about it before I became one. And it shows me one more time tonight that self-knowledge means nothing with this disease. Our book talks about that. Nowhere in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous do we have a chapter called Into Thinking. But we do have one that's called Into Action. And that's the only reason I'm standing here 14 years sober, I got to tell you. And the day came in the hospital told me, we have had all the crap we're going to take off of you. We cannot read about our nursing staff in the paper anymore. Glue in husbands, drunk driving charges, bad checks, all the stuff that you're doing. Everything you do in Lincoln's in the paper, I'm sorry to say. They knew my game, let me tell you. And they said, you either go into a treatment center, you no longer have this job. Well, you guys, you know what? You don't tell people like me that stuff. And I said, you and what army's going to make me go to a treatment center? And I walked out of a job that I love more than in the whole world, and I cannot say that enough tonight. And I drank and I drank and I died 1,000 times over. I went to work at a nursing home there in Lincoln. What I'm about ready to tell you guys is something I'm not proud to discuss in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I think it's very, very necessary that I talk about this in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I found myself still in drugs in that nursing home. I was still on morphine and Demerol and cocaine and Valium and I'd get my damn hands on. And if you think I'm proud of that, you were sadly mistaken. And the day came to me, the people that ran that place came up to me and they said, Karen, what is wrong with you? You are just weird is what you are. You know, you take good care of the patients, you're a good nurse and stuff, but you're just strange. And I remember thinking to myself, you'd be strange too if you had 200 milligrams of Demerol on board. You'd be strange too. And I threw narcotic keys at them and I walked out the door before they fired me. And I went to work at Bryan Memorial Hospital there in Lincoln. And you guys, it's a fine, fine facility. And I was drunk on that interview and I got that nursing position. And I'm not talking about falling down drunk. I was just maintaining a certain level of alcohol in my bloodstream that I would not shake and have those violent tremors. That is clearly desperation drinking. Our book describes it vividly. And I was in hot water up to my yin-yang, let me tell you. I had to drink and I had to take drugs and I had no more choice than any of it. And I will tell you guys right up front here tonight that it was all of me. It was something I had to do. And when that happens, it's a whole different ballgame, let me tell you. The very thought that I might drink again makes the hair on my neck stand straight up, I got to tell you. And that is why I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never want to have to go through that again and stuff. But anyway, I kept that job for a short amount of time, doing the same things I was doing at that nursing home, stealing drugs, justifying in my head, I don't mean to do this, I'm not a bad person, this is a temporary thing, I'm never going to do it again. We all know that never happens for us, we just jump from the fat to the fire here. And the day came here and I got caught red-handed stealing some morphine from the hospital, and this has got to be without a doubt the most humiliating day of my entire life. When they said, you give us your narcotic keys and you get out of this hospital, don't you ever walk back in here again. We're reporting this to the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska. That's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they should have done. My other two jobs should have done too, as a matter of fact. And to make a long story short from your night, I lost my nursing license. I threw the one thing, you guys, that I loved money in the whole world right down the toilet so I could drink. And like I said earlier, that is total insanity is what it is. It's also called alcoholism. And to make a long story short from your night, I went up on the streets of Nebraska is what happened to me. And you guys, I spent 2 years of the most miserable years of my life on the streets, let me tell you. And I'll guarantee you one thing, that I have seen and done things that no woman should ever see or doing. I'm still so sick in the head sometimes I think to myself, I wouldn't mind seeing some of them again. You know, my sponsor assures me I'm still a very ill person thinking that kind of crap. And, you know, I've been in nut houses, I've been in detoxes, I've been in jails, I've been in institutions. I cannot think of anything that happened to me on the streets as a practicing female alcoholic. Things happened to me I would not repeat from your podium tonight, but I'm sure that you had the general idea. And 2 years went by for me, and there I was back there in Lincoln, standing on Skid Row, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And I certainly had better things intended for myself than to be doing that, I got to tell you. I will never forget that last day of my drinking as long as I live, and I hope to God it was the last day of my drinking. I apparently was so physically sick I just passed down the streets is what happened, but before that happened, I remember thinking to myself, there was a Hilton Hotel adjacent to that Skid Row area, and I remember thinking 2 years ago I used to stand on top of the Hilton Hotel and drink martinis with surgeons. What am I doing standing on Skid Row drinking with these people? And I rather imagine those people felt the same way when they arrived there, and like I said, I can't tell you much about it at all. I woke up in an intensive care ward at the very hospital I was born at, the very hospital I had my children at, the very hospital I worked at for 19 years. And I will tell you guys clearly that the alcoholic hell for me started the day I got sober. I don't know if people in this room have been through withdrawal, but I can tell you it's not a pleasant experience and stuff. And, you know, I'm not a very big person. I only weighed 95 pounds that I got sober. And I was coming off a quart or whatever a day and 200 milligrams of Valium a day. That is a lot of booze. That is a lot of pills. And I had a lot of dying to do. You know, they say that most alcohol withdrawal is over within 3 days, and perhaps it is for some people. It certainly was not for me. It was going to be a long, long time before I was going to start feeling better. And I laid in that intensive care ward. I had tubes coming out of my belly. They were draining fluid off my liver. I had IVs going. And I found myself in withdrawal, you guys. It was so bad I cannot begin to tell you. And I laid in that bed, and I shook, and I shook, and I died for 30 solid days. And I'd scream at those nurses and say, you get me some Librium, you get me some Valium, you get me something. This is absolutely inhumane that anybody should have to go this kind of withdrawal. And they said, Karen, listen to us. You need to fill every one of those tremors and maybe you'll never do it again. I went to a fine, fine facility, you guys. They knew exactly what they were doing with alcoholics. And they went on to tell me, there's nothing wrong with your heart. It's not throwing any irregularities. You need to fill every one of those tremors and maybe you'll never do it again. And I did not want to hear that, let me tell you. But let me tell you what these people did for me. And I will be forever grateful as long as I'm sober in this program. They got about 10 members of Alcoholics Anonymous to come and sit with me. It was your original 12-step call, let me tell you. And these people never left me day or night for 30 solid days. I had a member of AA with me around the clock for 30 solid days. And I fell in love with these people, and I'll tell you why. There was nobody in my life today I got sober. My family wanted nothing to do with me. They've been through it too many times. They're going to go through it one more time. My mom, who I loved very, very much, you guys, had to be hospitalized because of me and put on tranquilizers. My mom did not deserve that by a long shot. And I have not forgotten that as I stand here tonight. And although my mother is dead, I have to make constant living amends to that woman. And I think I can do that by being a good member of AA and so forth. But anyway, I fell in love with these people. And they'd sit by the hour and they'd say things like, Karen, just keep breathing. That's all I got to do is breathe. And I'd say, when is this withdrawal going to stop? And they said, when it's time, that's when it's going to stop. And that wasn't good enough for me. I wanted a date is what I wanted. And they couldn't give me a date, and they were absolutely accurate about that. And at 30 days of sobriety, I walked in that official treatment program at that hospital. I'm a product of a treatment center. I have no opinion on one way or the other, but apparently I went to a fine one because all they talked about was Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's a lot of bad ones out there, you guys, let me tell you. And thank God I went to a good one. And I walked into group therapy the first time. And let me tell you what I was like when I was 30 days sober. I needed you so desperately on day one, but 30 days later was a whole different ballgame when you started telling me what to do. And I walked in that group, and there was 14 guys in that group, and there were drunk driving charges and stuff like that. I couldn't identify with these people. I'd done those things years prior to my alcoholism. And this one guy looked at me and he said, you think you're better than everybody else here, don't you? And I made a comment to that man that I was to pay for a long, long time in that treatment center, a comment I would not repeat from your podium tonight. And as a direct result of that comment, I found myself in an inpatient 30-day program for 7 months, you guys. And that is a long time to be in an inpatient 30-day program. And I completed that program, and I went to an outpatient program, and I went to an evening care program, and I went to an aftercare program. And I found myself a very, very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I wasn't doing one thing the way that you teach people in AA to do it. I would tell the new people, you don't need to read the book, and you don't need a sponsor. We can do whatever the hell we want to do around here. This is an individual program. And I rapidly went through 19 sponsors in that town. And I'm not proud of it as I stand here tonight. And you can, you know, you can pull your crap under just for so long. And these old-timers are going to start nailing you one right after the other. God love the mean old-timers and ADLs. Saved my life, I got to tell you. And they are dying off right and left, I got to tell you guys. And they have taught me well, and I will be internally grateful, I got to tell you. But I didn't feel that way in 1982, I got to tell you. And this old guy with 29 years of sobriety grabbed me out of an AA meeting one day, and he said, come outside, I want to talk to you. He said, you stay away from the new people. How dare you tell the new people in AA they don't read the book and they don't need a sponsor. He said, you're like a typhoid Mary in AA. Everybody dies around you, but you're able to stay sober somehow. He said, you stay away from the new people. And he went on to tell me, there's going to be a man from California speaking in Kearney, Nebraska this weekend. His name is Clancy. You're going to be hearing this man speak. You're going to ask this man if he will sponsor you. He is a master at dealing with jerks like you. And I heard all about Clancy, and I wanted nothing to do with him, period, because I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble. And I got to tell you guys that my fears have been justified 8,000 times over. And I told this old charmer, I said, who the hell do you think you are that you're going to tell me he's going to be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, if you don't get in that car and go with us Saturday, I'm going to tell everybody in Lincoln how you stole money from an AA meeting. And I'll guarantee I was in that car going to Kearney, Nebraska. You know, and for the old times or not, I paid that money back too, by the way. And I will tell you guys from a podium in Kearney, Nebraska, that Clancy literally, and I mean literally, put the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. And my life has never been the same since that talk. And there's a reason for that. For the first time in my sobriety, I was identifying with another alcoholic. And as I understand Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what this thing is all about. I know of no finer speaker in the world than my sponsor. I'm not saying that you need to believe that. It's only important that I believe that. And by the end of that talk, I wanted that man for my sponsor. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how God works in Karen's life. I never would have asked that man to sponsor me in a million years. Trust me, I would not have asked him. And I found myself walking across that convention floor and asking that man to be my sponsor. And he looked at me and he said, I don't sponsor crazy people like you. And that's a lie anyway. He sponsors people crazier than I ever thought of being. And I thought to myself, why did he say that to me for? He doesn't even know me. And I wasn't aware of the fact this old timer called him 2 weeks prior to him coming to Nebraska and asked him if they brought me, if he would talk to me. He said, of course I will. And he knew my game, let me tell you. And I was standing in my little white dress on, my little white gloves on, acting like an angel. And he saw right through my crap, I got to tell you. And thank God he saw through my crap. And he said, Karen, I don't like to sponsor people on long distance basis, but I'm going to do this for you, because if I don't do it for you, you're probably going to go die somewhere. But he said, I'm going to tell you something, little girl, and you better listen to me real good, because I'm going to say it one time and one time only. You're going to call me every day. I tell you not to call me every day. You think it costs too much money to call from Lincoln, Nebraska to L.A.? You better get 2 jobs, because that's what you're going to be doing. You're going to sponsor people. You're becoming an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're not going to argue with me. You're not going to defend your actions to me. You're going to do what I ask you to do. And if you don't want to do that, then get yourself a different sponsor. And you guys, you want to talk about, you? We stood at the turning point. This is the day when my recovery really did begin in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said 2 words that I almost fell over when I said them. I said, yes, sir. And I'll guarantee that I say it today, too. Respect's got to start for me somewhere. It might as well start with my sponsor in this program. I never would have told that man yes, sir, you guys. I think if there's a God in my life, it just happened. I just said, yes, sir. I could not believe I said that. And I was sorry immediately that I said it, but he started talking too fast, and I couldn't take it back and stuff. And anyway, you know, he shut off all these orders to me. I went back to Lincoln. I became very, very active in AA the right way. I wound up by sponsoring 56 women in that town. I'm not bragging about that. It's not that much fun to sponsor 56 crazy women in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I grew to love these women very, very much, and I'll tell you why. They literally showed me the first 4 years of my sobriety what to do and what not to do in this program. And every one of those women are still sober today. It's not because of me. It's because they're active members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the first directions my sponsor gave me, I want you to get that nursing license back. And I tried to tell this man, I cannot go to that kind of humiliation. He said, quit arguing with me and give the State Board of Nursing Nebraska, tell those people that you've been sober in AA for a year and a half, you'd like the opportunity to get your nursing license back. And you guys, I knew it wasn't going to work, but I did it anyway. And that's without a doubt the most important thing I can say in this room tonight, that I did what my sponsor asked me to do, whether I thought it would work or not. And I went there and asked them for my license back. And they looked at me like I had just grown horns on the top of my head, I got to tell you. And they said, how many links are you willing to go to? And I had to do a lot, you guys. I had to take crap off people for 2 years that I wouldn't hire to mow my own lawn, if you want to know the truth. And I had to keep my mouth shut in the process. And one of the happiest days of my life occurred about 10 years ago last April, when one more time I was stripped in front of the State Board of Nursing Nebraska. And what they told me brought me to my knees for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, welcome home. You're fully reinstated as a registered nurse. And as a gift from AA, I do not deserve that, but I intend to take it, I can tell you that. And I came out here to visit a couple times. I fell in love with Southern California AA. If you're new in this room tonight, I want you to know that you are in the mecca of Alcoholics Anonymous in the whole world. This is the best place to be and be sober. I don't know if that's true because I get the honor of speaking all over the world. And I welcome you and I hope that you stay in. I told my sponsor on the phone one day, I want to move to Southern California. I want to go in the Pacific group. I want to live in that crazy Venice Beach with all those crazy people. I knew I'd feel like a glove and not been wrong about that either. I want to work at UCLA in the operating room. I want to be on two of their transplant teams, their heart and liver transplant teams. I want this and I want that. And every single one of those things have come true for me. And those are all gifts from AA. I do not deserve any of it, but I intend to take it, I can tell you. And, you know, I want to tell you guys a quick story before I sit down here tonight. Larry wants me to tell this so bad he can hardly wait and stuff. But I hope I have enough time to tell it. But anyway, I want to teach you what my sponsor's taught me. That's probably the most important thing that he's ever taught me in my life. And what he's taught me is to do what's in front of me and quit debating and stuff. Do what God gives you to do and quit trying to change it and stuff. And I said, what the hell does that mean? He said, like, answer the phone when it rings. That's what it means. Go to work in the morning. You know, make your bed, eat, do what you're supposed to do. And so I started doing those things and my life started changing and stuff, but I still don't want to do it most of the time, if you want to know the truth. But anyway, about 7 years ago, we had a terrible nursing crisis in Southern California, and we were working our butts off, let me tell you. And I was always the first one to complain about it, I'm sorry to say. And this one particular week, I worked 72 hours, and you know, we're likely we're too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. I was a bitch is what I was. And I worked the night shift over there, and I had the night off, the next night off, and I went to meet early in the evening. I went home and I went to bed early. I was just exhausted, and the phone rang about 2 o'clock in the morning, and it was my boss. And my boss makes Clancy look like a pussycat, I can assure you. She's one of the finest nurses I've met before in my life, and one of these days when I grow up, I want to be just like her and stuff. But she said, I got 18 people sick over here tonight. I need your help. We're going to do a liver transplant, a little girl that's about 3 years old. Now, please come to work and help me. I said, I have worked 72 hours this week. I have been bled white, for Christ's sakes. And she hung up on me is what she did. And, you know, there it was, you guys. My sponsor has taught me to do what's in front of me. And I could just hear his big mouth saying to me, nobody ever died from lack of sleep, Karen. And then I'd have to say, no, you know, there's a first time for everything, Clancy, you know. But anyway, I was going to call him, but I don't want to talk to him about nothing at 2 o'clock in the morning. I just went to work, and I'm so glad that I did, because the most precious thing happened to me, you guys, that I want to share with you here tonight. But anyway, I got over there, and I sent my orderly upstairs to get a little girl to bring her down to surgery, this little 3-year-old child that needed a liver transplant desperately and stuff. And we had a jet coming from the East Coast to deliver for this child. We had some time to kill and stuff. And I was in the back, and my orderly went upstairs and got her, brought her down, and he called me in the back, and he said, come out in front and get your little girl. You're not going to believe all the people that were with this family. And I thought, well, that's nice if they have the support. I was so crabby, you guys. And I went out in front, and first thing I noticed was the mother. She had the most beautiful blue eyes I've ever seen before in my life, and the dad was good-looking and stuff. And there was about 75 people with this family, you guys. How highly unusual at 4 o'clock in the morning. How highly unusual any time of the day or night, if you want to know the truth. And they were being of tremendous support to this family, and I was drawn to these people in a great, great way and stuff. And I bent down and looked at my little patient. And I got to tell you guys that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to love at a level I never, ever, ever dreamt possible for myself. And I ever so gently fell in love with this little baby girl. And she was so sick she couldn't lift her head off the pillow. She was so sick and dying from some strange liver thing and stuff and needed a transplant. And I talked to her and I said, and she had, in her arms she had a little bear and she had a blanket wrapped around that bear. And she was hanging on here for dear life, I got to tell you. And I've been over and talked, and I said, oh, you brought your little bear down to surgery and tried to tell me her little bear was going to have a liver transplant. And I said, oh, you're both going to have one. And she said, no, just the bear, you know. But anyway, we sent the family out the waiting room, and that mom was in absolute hysterics, I got to tell you guys. And this little girl looked at me, and she said, why is my mommy crying? Go tell my mommy not to cry. I can't stand it when my mommy cries. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, what I've learned in this program, I was able to tell that little girl the truth. And I said, your mommy's crying because your mommy loves you so very, very much. And that seemed to settle her down, you guys, and stuff. And we have an anesthesiologist at UCLA that loves to play with the kids. And he's a great guy. I love working with this man. And so he plays with the little kids and puts them to sleep. And when the bear went to, when she went to sleep, the little bear went to sleep. And when she got her IV, the bear got an IV. And we hung a bed that said bear juice on it. And she thought that was funny, too, and stuff. But anyway, that 16-hour liver transplant did not go well, you guys. We almost lost that baby due to blood loss and stuff. I have never seen a team of people pull together like we pulled together for that baby that night. And we sent her upstairs with really not much hope at all, I got to tell you guys. And we said some prayers on that one, I got to tell you. And I became obsessed with this child, and I had to see her again. And we have a rule at UCLA, you know, get involved with these transplant patients. They don't know where the organs come from. We cannot tell them. It's best not to see them after surgery. And I didn't tell anybody in this room tonight that I'm real good at breaking rules now, aren't I? And I thought to myself, I'm just going to go up and see how she's doing. I'm not going to talk to anybody. And that's exactly what I did. And when that little girl was 6 days post-op from that transplant, I went to that little child's room. And I opened the door to that little girl's room. And you guys, I could not believe what was in front of my face. My God, the power of God, the power of God. Here was this little baby girl. It was the first time she'd been up since her surgery. She was jumping up and down in her crib. She had her diapers hanging around her knees. She had that bear in one arm, and she put Band-Aids all over this bear. He had Band-Aids on his eyes, his ears, his nose, and I mean everywhere. And other hand, she had a baby bottle, and she was sucking on that baby bottle. It was the first time she'd been up since her surgery. And that whole room full of people were in there. And something caught my eye out the corner of my eye. And I'll be damned if our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, wasn't sitting on that kid's dresser. Now, if you think I was going to stay out of that room, I didn't care if I got fired. And I was in that room like a flash. And I said to the mother, I said, whose book is that? And she said, well, that's my book. I'm a member of AA, and her husband's a member of AA. And her sponsor was there, and his sponsor was there. And those 75 people, you guys, had driven 500 miles to be with this family. They were not from the LA area. And I got to tell you that I was impressed. One more time, they show me what this deal is all about. It's about love and service, and that's all that it's about. And I walked over to the mother, and I said, how long have you been sober? And she said, 5 years today. And I thought, oh, my God, her little girl up for the first time. What a fabulous present and stuff. And I went over to this little girl, and she looked at me, and she said, go away, I'm not sick anymore. And I, if I'd known I was going to go in there, I might have changed my clothes and stuff. And it scared the hell out of her is what it did. And I said, hey, come up here to hurt you. I just came here to see how you're doing. You guys, she gave me her little bear. And she said, you take him home and take care of him. He needs a nurse to take care of him. And you guys, I told the mother, I said, I can't take that little girl's bear home. I got that bear with that kid's liver transplant. You really need to keep it as a memento. We had it by her little head the whole time of her surgery, you guys, in a little plastic bag and stuff. And she said, Karen, please take it. She wants you to have it. She's got 50 bears in this room. And she did indeed have 50 bears in that room. And I felt like a fool walking down the hall with that bear. But I will tell you guys that that bear is my most prized possession in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and stuff. And I thought I need to reciprocate here. I obviously wasn't prepared for a birthday party, and I had a 5-year medallion in my pocket. I was 7 years sober when this happened, and I'd hung on that medallion for 2 years too long. We say in Alcoholics Anonymous that you've got to give it away to keep it. You've got to give it away. And that medallion was from my sponsor, and I'm a selfish woman, I'm sorry to say. I could not seem to find the woman that was my opinion special enough to get my medallion. And I knew I had found her, you guys. I knew I had found her. And I gave that one my medallion. She said, Karen, I can't take that. My God, Clancy gave you that. And I said, please take it. I want you to have it. And I really meant it, you guys. I really didn't mean that. The nurses got wind of all this. We got a cake for the mother. We celebrated her 5 years of sobriety. And I got to tell you guys, it was the most fabulous days of my entire life. And I could have missed the whole damn thing if I hadn't answered that phone that night. I could have missed the whole thing. I wonder how many times in my life I've missed stuff. And anyway, I called my sponsor on the phone. I had never seen Clancy so excited in my life. Within 3 hours, he had about 50 cars in front of UCLA. And I cannot begin to tell you how proud I was to take those people to my home group in Alcoholics Anonymous that night. You know, there's been no more contact with them. It's got to be that way for many, many reasons. But I know that little girl is doing very, very well. You know, people say to me all the time, why do you keep doing it, Karen? Why do you keep doing it? And I know of no greater thing to say to them, so that this to the end, that my great blessings may never spoil me, that I may forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. And I'm going to say one more thing, and I'm going to sit down here. It has been one hell of a walk from Skid Row in Nebraska to where I stand tonight in Bellflower, California. And I think that but for the grace of God in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I would have missed it all. Thank you for having me, and thank you for my life.
Okay, I would like to thank those who participated tonight. Brian for Chapter 5, Clarissa for the 12 Traditions. Let's have a round of applause for our speaker, Carol. I must to remind the group that we need help cleaning up in the kitchen. I'd like to thank Ron for asking me to lead the meeting tonight. Next week, our meeting will be led by another sober alcoholic. And after a moment's meditation, I'd like to ask Linda to lead us in the prayer.
Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever. Amen. Keep coming back, great works.
This is recorded October the 3rd, 1996, at Lakewood Speakers Meeting.
This is a Caskey recording.
For copies of this and other tapes, write P.O. Box 15818, Long Beach, California, 90815.